It's time for Wonder Pod, episode 144. It's a Friday edition. John was stuck shuffling papers, which I dread and unfortunately know well, too, last night, so we are recording on Friday, so you'll be getting this Saturday. For those of you that didn't get to listen to us this morning while taking your morning dump, I apologize. It's really been a lifelong dream of mine to know that somebody listens to us while they're on the can. And with that out of the way, please welcome my co-host. First up, Glacinator.
Hello, coming to you live in HD this time. Now you hear all the different syllables of my sexy voice.
Wow. I know, the little turd's got a better mic than I do now. This cannot stand. Now I'm going to have to spend more money here, right? he's a college student who had to buy it for college. I'm not. Also joining us, as he always does, they let him off the ball and chain this week, or at least tonight, is John.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, just barely off the chain. I actually left work late again tonight, but it wasn't as late as yesterday. My God, it was unreal, and Roger suffered right along with me. So, yeah, so here I am, and thanks for postponing.
By the way, Roger's kind of become the shout-out extraordinaire on the show. It is not, in fact, him that listens to us on the can. That would be somebody else who used to be on the show. And seems to love mentioning it over and over again, and it's fine, because I get a kick out of it. First time he told me that.
Now, I will say that I cannot confirm or deny the can thing, but...
Oh, I know for a fact that the person I'm thinking of does, because he basically told me, what am I supposed to listen to on the shooter tomorrow? And now he's probably really going to be kind of embarrassed because I'm throwing this on air, but that's all right. It's pretty hard to embarrass him. Glacinator, do you want to go first with what we've been playing?
Sure. I don't have that much, but I'll make it sort of quick.
This one's going to be short, I think.
Yeah. Well... To go with what I usually say, I've been playing more Halo 4, of course, this week. That's usually what I tend to gravitate towards when I turn on my Xbox. And this week, last week I was talking about how they added a new Forge playlist. But this week they added Griffball. And for those of you that don't play Halo, Griffball is sort of like a reference to Red versus Blue. It's basically basketball with hammers and swords. And so, your usual Halo fun. And... It's pretty good, actually. They implemented a new feature in Halo 4 where you can actually pass the ball if you want to. So there's actually some strategy now, as opposed to just running at the guy that has the ball and randomly swinging your hammer, hoping you'll get them. So, I mean, if you have a good team with you and they're passing the ball, you can actually do some pretty cool maneuvers, and it's pretty fun. They have different maps for it. I mean, there's always a flat level playing field. So, I mean, it'd be interesting, I think, if they changed it up. Maybe put some obstacles in the middle of the course so you had to get from one side to the other. But maybe they'll do it in the future. I don't know. Also, I had a weird experience playing this week. For some reason, my campus internet decided to totally just derp out this week. And I was playing an online match. And I was lagging so hard that I randomly died. Like, apparently someone shot me. Like, lag shot me. I died. But my kill cam didn't come up. Like, my camera was still on. Except it was where my head was on the ground. So, like, I could still, like, move the camera around where my body was, and people were walking over me, and, like, they could still see my name above me because they were still shooting at me like I was still alive. It was so weird. I couldn't kill anyone, but I was just stuck like that for the rest of the game. It was pretty amusing. But also, just in the past 2 days, Pat on the Facebook page and also on the site as well mentioned Mutant Muds, which is a game on iPhone, and I think it was originally for 3DS. And it's basically just your side-scroller platformer, and you're a guy with glasses, and you have a gun and whatnot. And it's free, which was the main thing when he told us to download it. So, I mean, if it's free, why not pick it up? And I was actually pleasantly surprised with it. I'd played some other platformers on iPhone where it involves a D-pad. And it can be sort of weird, like your thumb will sometimes hit right when you're trying to hit up or, you'll go the wrong way and it just doesn't work. But in Mutant Muds, the D-pad, touchscreen D-pad, actually works really well. I haven't had any problems with it at all. The main, thing about the game is that it takes place on different layers, like in the background. So it being on 3DS, I can see how it worked on 3DS, but even then on the iPhone, it still works. So like you'll be walking and there'll be a platform. You can jump, and you'll jump into the background. And then from that, you can jump into the background even more on a different layer. So it's sort of like those some of those levels in Super Paper Mario or you could just go in a pipe and you'd be in a pipe in the very back of the map. I mean, it's not that hard. I mean, there's some secret levels that you can do that are a little bit more challenging, but I mean, there's enough checkpoints scattered around and you have infinite lives that it won't be a problem. But I mean, it's a pretty fun game. It's a time killer. I mean, it's your iPhone. That's the whole point of it. So if it's still free, I definitely suggest looking it up. And that's what I've been playing.
Yeah, it started out on 3DS, got denied on Steam, which kind of was the kickoff for Steam Greenlight, and then it didn't get... I still don't think it's been voted into Steam. I haven't checked lately. I'm not sure if it's had an Android port yet, but it's supposedly really great with the way it kind of moves in and out of those layers. I probably need to pick it up because I still do have an iPhone.
Yeah, the pixel art for it is pretty decent as well. The sprites are pretty interesting. Like, they have really funny like character animations when you leave them idle, which is nice to see again.
Idle animations are something that needs to make a comeback. They've always been kind of funny. They're in Saints Row 3, where if you leave your character idle for a long time, they'll start dancing or farting or doing something childish, apparently. John, what have you been playing this week?
I really haven't been playing a whole lot. A couple of new games. First, I played BitTrip Saga, and if you guys have been following me on Twitter, I made a mention about it. How it's a compilation of all the BitTrip games that were on WiiWare in the last couple of years. So BitTrip, Beat, and Runner, and a bunch of others. I think it was a total of six, and you know they all go for I think $5 to $10 on WiiWare. And so anyway, it came to my attention that they actually released a compilation on Wii and a compilation for 3DS. And this one, and Saga being the one for 3DS. So I was interested in getting it, and what appealed to me was that you could get it off the 3DS eShop for $15, and which is cheaper than any physical copy that's out in any store that I looked up online, because it's going for $30 as a cartridge. And so digital was great. You know, it's not a huge game either, so it doesn't take up that much room. So that's what I went with. And so I've played a couple of them, not all the way through, of course, but just a few levels. BitTrip Runner being my favorite so far, and I think that's pretty well the consensus across the internets that it is the best one. So it's a simple, you know, infinite, not really an infinite runner. It's broken up into stages, but it's a runner where, you know, your guy is going from just running through a stage and various obstacles, and you have to press jump over the right at the right time and avoid various obstacles and collect coins. But the trick is, the kicker is that there's this really cool chiptune 8-bit style music that goes along as with every jump and every time you hit these red crosses that are kind of hovering in the air, and the music just builds up in layers and layers as the level continues. And so, it's just really fun and really satisfying to make that music come to a full crescendo by the end. I'm only on the first quote unquote world, and I'm only in four or five stages in. The game is tough, though. I will say, if you fail anywhere in the level, you are kicked back to the beginning. So there's no, and each level is probably takes, you know, I guess maybe a minute to 2 minutes per level. So I mean, you can get to the right to the very end, and if you hit an obstacle, back you go right to the beginning. And so I can foresee in future levels when things get really tough how that could end up being a bit frustrating. But it's the kind of thing where at the very least you start right away. There's no load screens. Just jump right back in. So those kinds of games don't really bother me too much. But hopefully you'll be okay. And I guess as I play the other ones, I'll probably report more on those as I get used to them. I also played another runner that I wanted to buy. I heard about it on a different video game website called Temple Run 2, and for iOS. And that's another runner, except that it's top down, watching a guy run from behind. And he's running through a temple or out of a temple away from this monster. And it's the same sort of thing. You have to, you know, swipe up to jump, swipe down to slide, you know, tilt the phone, your phone left or right to make him go side to side, that kind of stuff, while you're collecting coins. And you know, but this one is an infinite runner, and you keep on going, trying to beat your times and get further and further and beat your scores and that kind of thing. Now, that's a free game, but the kicker is that they want you to buy, like, if you want to buy continues, you have to pay real space bucks to get them. And so I guess there's the leaderboards for the scores, from what I understand, is a little bit frustrating in that if you're really, like, the competitiveness really doesn't apply, because if you're willing to spend more money, then you're going to get further in that particular game and therefore raise your score. So, but then that being said, I'm not looking to beat people's scores in Temple Run 2, but it's a nice looking game. It's fun. You know, Peter really enjoys it. Every time you run into a tree or run into a brick wall, a little picture comes up saying what happened to you. So you'll be a picture of the guy's face with his head bandaged up if he banged into something. If he fell off a cliff, you can see him kind of like sliding down the side of a cliff. If the monster that's chasing you grabs you, you see the picture of the monster with a knife and a fork in his hand. So Peter gets a pretty good laugh at that. And so, you know, if anything keeps Peter occupied for a few minutes, it's great. And so on the console side, I played some more new Super Mario Brothers U, no surprise there. Played more Nintendo Land with Peter. Peter has expanded his interest into other games in the Nintendo Land group, outside of the Mario Chase and the Luigi's Mansion one that I mentioned, which are just kind of amped up versions of Pac-Man. But he's gotten into the Zelda one a lot, where one person is with a Wii pad is the archer, and the other person has a sword, and you can have up to five people kind of going through these levels that are like the sword fighting stuff in Wii Sports Resort, which I think I might have talked about this before. Yeah, but the levels kind of get more intricate as you go on, get a little deeper, more powerful enemies. So there's a little more meat to it than like the Mario Chase, which is just the same basic principle over and over and over, and the game never really changes. And you know, these are on rails and all that, so they don't change either, but at the very least there's some more challenge as you go along. And he also likes the Pikmin one, which is an even deeper game where one person is Olimar and the other players are Pikmin, along with a little tiny Pikmin, and that gets progressively harder as you go too. So, and there's like 9 different levels, maybe 10 or maybe even 15, I'm not sure actually, but it, you know, there's depth there, which is really cool to have, and I'm glad that he enjoys them. And finally, I played some Overlord, which is a game that was on 360 a couple of years ago. Wanda was using the big TV and the Kinect playing Zumba or Just Dance, something like that. And rather than interrupt her, I went into her scrapbooking room where she has a TV and her own Xbox, and I loaded up my account and popped in her copy of Overlord that she has out there. Because Wanda's a big Pikmin fan, and Overlord was kind of a Pikmin patch until, you know, she's been hoping for Pikmin 3 for a long time, and which is going to come out this year, but it's for the system after the one that we bought for it, to be honest, the original Wii. Anyway, back to Overlord. Overlord is, you're this evil guy, and you have these minions, which are these goblin-type things, and you can send them out into the world to wreak havoc. Pikmin, sort of Pikmin style. You don't throw any of the gremlins or the goblins, but you can make them sweep out, and you can direct them to attack a person or any kind of a creature, or to bust down a fence or move an obstacle out of the way if they can lift it by the number that you have. And it's a lot like Pikmin, but it's not quite as charming as Pikmin. It's fun because you play this sort of fantasy fairy tale land, and you just wreak havoc as you go around because you're trying to be the most evil dude on the go. And I only played the first couple of levels. I felt kind of bad setting some hobbits on fire because they were standing in a grass field, tall grass field, and you know, it's just after you get the fire spell, so you just set it all on fire and let them all burn to death, and when you hear them screaming and stuff, it's kind of disturbing, but dark and funny in a dark humor kind of way. So I don't know if I'll be playing much Overlord, but it was an okay distraction that day, and you know, if maybe I'll go back to it if I get some more Pile of Shame knocked away. And that's about it.
I've played both of them. I think I beat the first one, and I got hung up in a pretty hard area in the second, and then got distracted by other games. I love the Overlord series. It's funny you should mention Pikmin, because I never thought of that. It reminded me more of Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Okay.
Because of the very childish humor and what you can do with the... And it gets even funnier in the second one. Because in the second one, you have hippie elves. You have hippie tree-hugging elves, no less. You have Romans, like mm-hmm. Roman dudes running around in togas. I mean, I'm not going to give too much away in case you ever decide you want to give the second one a shot. I actually thought the second was a little better, but harder. But okay. I'd give it a little more. It was one that I was kind of leery of, and a good friend of mine told me that, you know, give it a shot. I think you're going to like it. And I bought it used, and sure enough, I just had a blast playing it. And figuring out new things to do with the minions is always hilarious. But I never tied it in with Pikmin, but that is another good parallel to it is Pikmin.
It seems fun.
So as to what I've been playing, luckily for you, I thought of a couple while I was farting around on my tablet. Obviously, Worm. It's pretty much my main game right now. It's going to take a really great game coming out to tear me away from it for the most part. But I have been playing, and one that I forgot about last week, Glacier might get a kick out of this, is I downloaded the Minecraft, what the hell do they call it? The Minecraft Pocket Edition for my tablet, the demo. Mostly because I wanted to see what it looked like on the tablet. I'd seen screenshots of the mobile version, the phone version, and Glacinator talked about that. And I have to admit, it wasn't enough to make me buy it, considering I have the PC version already. But I was rather impressed with the demo portion of Minecraft Pocket Edition on tablet. The bigger screen is obviously much, much better than a phone, at least to my estimation. And I could see, if I was going to be gone more, traveling more, I could see myself paying for it just because it's Minecraft. I mean, you can sit there and build. You can, again, as Glacinator said in his What We've Been Playing, you know, it's a perfect time waster. I'm cheap, essentially, when it comes to some things. And I just didn't see the point in having it in two places. I think I probably would rather buy it on 360 than my tablet. The other one that I've been playing is called Battle Loot Adventure, and it's actually something that I've been kind of jonesing for. And the nice thing about it is it's free with ads, meaning you get annoyed by ads from time to time, which, fair enough. You know, in the mobile space, that's kind of what you got to deal with if you don't want to pay for it. And I don't think this even has a buy version. It's essentially like an early Final Fantasy. The overworld map's top down. You're given little points where you can pick up quests. The battles are pretty much, you know, your guys on one side, their guys on the other. It's turn-based. And while turn-based RPGs were never my absolute special favorites like they can be with some people, they're a nice way to break up the current, you know, open world or semi-linear lots of choices RPGs, such as, you know, KOA Reckoning, Dragon's Dogma, Skyrim, things of that nature. So when I saw it was free, quoting the ever-present Patman, you know, I figured, why not let it be for me? I haven't played it a ton. I need to get into it a little bit more, but the combat seemed pretty simple. It's actually pretty a basic RPG. I can see people even not into RPGs maybe giving it a shot because it's so, you know, so very basic and not a ton to it, not a ton of customization. Like I said, it's a nice distraction or change of pace from RPGs or from something as labor-intensive as Worm. So that is what we've been playing. This week, there is no discussion topic. Not going to do that. Screw it. What we're going to do instead is we're going to put the bare bulb spotlight on Glacinator because he attended a Video Games Live concert last weekend What's the town you're calling?
It was in Lafayette.
Thank you. I wanted to say Baton Rouge, and that's too far It's not far enough south. Lafayette. So it was in Lafayette, near your campus, not in New Orleans?
Yeah, it was about 10 minutes away from campus.
Actually, now that I think about it, you probably don't want to be within 500 miles of New Orleans this weekend anyway.
Oh, yeah. My parents are, like, on lockdown mode.
Yeah. Well, it'll be over. It'll be over Sunday night, maybe. So why don't you go ahead and just give us a report. How was Video Games Live? And, you know, maybe tell us some of the stuff they played, anything okay. that surprised you, that kind of stuff.
All right, for those of you that don't know, Video Games Live is a... What they do is they come to your town and they get your symphony orchestra or whatever orchestra you have in your town, and they meet up with them, and they basically have they teach them a bunch of video game songs, and they put on a concert. And it's not like video game like bleep bloop like Pong and everything, but like these are like legit, you know, songs. I mean, they do some interpretations of older, you know, 16-bit 32-bit games that you wouldn't necessarily think would sound well in symphony. But they do everything from like Earthworm Jim, you know, to like the newest Final Fantasy soundtrack. And I had been to Video Games Live before I was even on this show. That was about 4 or 5 years ago when it was in Baton Rouge. And it was interesting to go again because they played different songs than they did the time before. And actually, I like the songs that they played this time more than I did last time. And I have a list of some of the games that they played, the music that they played from. I'll just list them off. They did a Castlevania, they did like a Mario medley, they did a Zelda medley, they did Chrono Trigger, Donkey Kong Country, World of Warcraft, Journey, Final Fantasy, Mega Man, Earthworm Jim, God of War, Shadow of the Colossus. They did a Guitar Hero segment, which is pretty funny, where they had a guy, what they would do before the show is that they'd have a tournament to see who's the best Guitar Hero player. And whoever was the best would get to go up on stage and play whatever song they chose while the orchestra played with them. And usually, I've seen videos of this online a lot. Usually it's some like random like little kid, you know, that he plays Guitar Hero every day of his life, and it's sort of awkward him going up there. But this time, the best Guitar Hero player apparently in Lafayette is this like 82-year-old bearded man who was visually impaired. It was absolutely amazing. So they had this old guy go up there. He played some Foo Fighters song while the orchestra played along with him. And if you got above like a million points or something on Expert or something, then he would get a prize. And he got it at like the very last 10 seconds of the song. It was like actually like a rock concert. It was pretty cool. And they also, at the very end, they played, you know, the Portal song. I mean, you got to play the Portal song. And so out of all those songs, I have to say, like, I was most excited that they played Shadow of the Colossus, because I had watched my roommate play that last semester, and when he first started playing, I noticed that the music in that game was absolutely beautiful, and it sounded great with the orchestra. They didn't have like the, you know, like the Native American pan flute that they had in the game, but even without that, it still sounded great. A lot of people freaked out about World of Warcraft and Final Fantasy, but I mean, I've never played those games before, so it was kind of, I mean, I appreciated it. It sounded good, but I didn't really have any attachment to those songs. Also, I forgot to mention, they also played Skyrim, which was pretty cool, because they had the, also besides the orchestra, they had the, I guess you'd call it the choir or a cappella group, or I don't know, it was just a bunch of singers in the back. And so they had all these guys come up and do the hua, hua, foof, ro, da, hua, like all the Viking noises while they're doing da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So that was pretty cool. But I think out of everything that they played, my favorite piece of music would definitely have to be the music from Journey, the PS3 game that came out last year. And it just sounded really good and is really moving. While the orchestra is playing, they have visuals from whatever game they're playing from in the background. So while they're playing the Journey music, they had, you know, gameplay of Journey. And they did that for all the games, but when they were showing Journey, because Journey is such more of a more visually driven game than all the others that they played, more so than like World of Warcraft, there was a lot more connection between the gameplay and the music that I noticed than any of the other games. And so I thought that was pretty interesting. I'm trying to think if they played anything else. I think that's it. I mean, it was about a 2-hour concert. They had an intermission. In between segments, they'd show random clips of games and like the 10 worst sound acting in games, or like what happens if we mix a Donkey Kong and Mortal Kombat, and they have like a little video on top. Oh, and at the beginning of the concert, they had a costume contest, and it got down to the two finalists, and one of them was this guy that made, he just dressed up like an Aperture Science scientist, and he had made the portal gun himself, and he had made GLaDOS, like a miniature GLaDOS that he controlled with a portal gun. It was absolutely amazing. And this, and the person that he was going up against was like a 5-year-old kid dressed as Link. And like, it wasn't anything special to me, but he was like 5 years old, so everyone clapped for him. And I felt so bad for the guy that had probably worked for like 10 months on making this GLaDOS thing, and he lost to this kid that was just one because he was cute. But I mean, it's whatever. It was a fun night, and I got to listen to some pretty cool stuff.
I'm actually surprised they included World of Warcraft. Maybe it's because I've played so many damn fantasy RPGs, but the music in that just struck me as run-of-the-mill.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I felt. It felt like sort of like an off Lord of the Rings soundtrack. Like, it was just sort of there, you know?
I guess they're doing it because WoW, even though it's losing steam slowly, you know, player base wise, it's still a phenomenal runaway success. I mean, Skyrim, honestly, and I still have the issue where music just kind of blends for me. It should be a part of the mechanics, not stand out kind of deal that I've always had. But Skyrim, to me, has probably the best RPG soundtrack and the most just emotion-provoking soundtrack. You know, or mood, I should say, maybe mood-provoking soundtrack that I've ever come across. I mean, they did really well with that. So I'm glad when you were, you know, before you remembered Skyrim, I'm sitting here muted thinking, they didn't play Skyrim? That shit's made for orchestral, you know, orchestral play. I mean, it's like, wow. Yeah, and so I'm glad they did.
I mean, you could really tell which pieces had more of a mood, and those that did were definitely better. I mean, like, listening to Mario and Zelda is fun and all. I mean, and you get the nostalgia, but orchestrally, whatever that word is, they weren't as impressive as some of the newer stuff.
I forget why I had to learn how to pronounce the word orchestral correctly, but it took a lot of fucking practice. This stuff ain't as easy as it sounds, folks. Orchestral's not easy.
Sounds like I have something in my mouth when I say that.
Sounds like you have a disease that you should get checked out by the doctor. Is what it sounds.
I have orchestralitis.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that I'm still to this day kicking myself for is I didn't have an opportunity, but tickets were, or I didn't have a plan to go. But when Video Games Live was first around, they were playing in San Francisco with the SF, I think they're called the Philharmonic, but so is a half bazillion others. And I thought about going. I had the money, I had the time, and I decided not to go. And I'm going to beat myself until the day I die that I didn't, because Steve Vai, who probably nobody but maybe two or three of our listeners knows who that even is, played quite a bit of guitar work on the original and the second Halo soundtrack. And he was there with Video Games Live, with the SF Symphony Orchestra, which John should be familiar with because of their work with Metallica. They're an excellent orchestra. And they played the Halo themes. And I've now been able to worm my way into being able to hear live cuts of that. Oh God, I wish I had gone, because while he's known as a heavy metal speed virtuoso kind of guitarist, he can pretty much fit anything he needs to. I mean, that's to me how to his biggest talent. He can play with anything and anybody. Oh God, it was awesome. And it's so understated. What he plays in those Halo themes is so understated, and it wasn't until after the Halo, you know, phenomenon blew up that I read about it in Guitar World. So I still need to catch them at some point, though. They appear here close within close enough driving distance for me that I should really go catch them.
Yeah, if you get the chance, definitely check it out. It was a lot of fun.
And, you know, I like the way vibes. I like the way they did. They did. I've heard some live cuts of them doing, and I don't remember which orchestra it was with. Maybe it was with that SF one, of them doing. Oh crap! We talk about it all the time. The Zelda from the N64.
Ocarina.
Yeah, doing a couple cuts of Ocarina at a time, and I thought it had the nostalgia feel, but I thought they did an awesome job with that interpretation, considering it's, you know, not exactly modern music by any stretch of imagination.
Oh, I mean, the Zelda medley still sounded amazing. It's just that it didn't have the mood that some of the others did.
Well, and this one I heard, I can't remember if it was the opening theme or the ending theme, or one of the themes towards later in the game. It wasn't a medley, it was the full song. There was the full bit of music, and so maybe that's why it appealed to me a little more. John, you got any questions, comments for Glacier before we move on from this? You'd probably have to travel a ways to see them, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we definitely would here. I would be surprised if they ever showed up on our doorstep somewhere. But I was going to ask Glace, was Tommy Tallarico there?
He's the guy with the guitar, right?
He's the guy. He's like the co-creator of the whole deal, and I didn't know whether he actually travel around to host it or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. He's like the main, like he was like the MC of everything.
He was. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, he used to co-host that Reviews on the Run show with Victor Lucas. He's a Canadian video game, you know, reviewer and general nerd talk about her.
Why anyway. What else has he done? Because his name's familiar to me, but not from video games.
Yeah, I just looked him up. He was there. Yeah.
Oh, Tommy. Yeah.
Yeah, Tommy. Why is it? What's his claim to fame outside of that? Because his name sounds really familiar, but I don't.
Well, he did the music for Earthworm Jim as well.
Oh, did he? I didn't know.
Yeah.
I think he's a guitarist. I think video game music and stuff is not the only thing he's done. I think he's been in some bands as well. I think that's why his name. You got his wiki pulled up there, Glace? I don't feel like turning on my tab.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. I'll let you know if I see anything.
Yeah, I think that's why I'm familiar with him, John. I didn't know that he'd got into video games, and I probably heard his name in connection with video games live, but...
Yeah, I mean, I used to... I mean, back when we had the GTV... is it GTV? Is that what it's
G4
called?
TV or whatever.
G4, G4. Yeah. When we first got that in Canada, like they used to play this Reviews on the Run show like three times a day, and it was just him and like it was like back episodes and new episodes of him and Victor Lucas talking, you know, reviewing games, and it was part of my, you know, daily regimen of video game, you know, news and reviews and. Yeah, he was on it for a while, then he ended up leaving the show right around when the Video Games Live thing started. So I knew he was a part of it, but I was just curious whether he was still traveling around with it.
If I recall correctly, maybe he's just done some work with Steve Vai and Joe Satriani, because I know I've heard him, and he's a pretty damn amazing guitarist.
He also apparently did the music for Prince of Persia.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Yeah,
I mean, that's cool. They played Earthworm Jim at the thing, and he's like, "Yeah, this is my favorite game that I worked on," and like he did all the guitar solos for it. So, I mean, that game has a pretty like spunky soundtrack, so it was pretty cool.
So there you go, Video Games Live. If it comes to a theater near you or wherever, go check it out. Okay, so Glacinator's gonna have to take off in pretty quick because he's got a prior commitment. So let's get to some stuff that one of me may not care about, but. The first one, and I found this interesting given how much we've been talking about Steam and their new love interests, so to speak, in Linux. So this kind of caught my eye, as it were. EA launches Origin Mac Alpha Client. Trial limited to a few thousand users, offers free copy of PopCap's Bookworm, which is a good game. Basically, the only thing that will be different from the PC, sounds like when it launches, will be the lack of no tab for Mac, which if you've been putting up with Steam, you should be used to that, and the inability to stream live to Twitch TV, which unless you're a 15-year-old COD player or Halo player, I don't imagine you'll care about that either. I just pissed off a bunch of professional gamers by saying that. But anyway, you will need a Mac running OS X 10.6.8 or newer with an Intel Core 2 Duo processor or better to download the client. There's one little blurb here I'm going to leave out for a second because it's going to be a rant comment I'm going to make. Mr. Glacinator.
Yes.
Are you going to have a wait-and-see attitude with this once it launches? I mean, it's an alpha right now. Or are you pleased to see that EA is throwing some love your way when it appears Steam's turning their back on you?
I mean, Steam was the same way with this initially. And the same attitude, like, oh, yeah, Mac users, get on board. We're going to have a grand old time, you know? And then we're like, well, F you. We don't need you anymore. So this is more of a wait-and-see for me, I guess. But I am interested because I really want to play SimCity, the new SimCity. I'm really interested in that. And apparently the only way that you can do that is through Origin. So I know that there's a lot of people complaining about the service and everything, but SimCity is looking pretty good, in all honesty. So I guess I'm sort of excited.
After seeing some of the stuff that they did to people during the demo and during the beta, I'm actually going to be skipping SimCity 5. They can take Origin and shove it up their ass sideways and their attitude. And that hurts because it is looking really awesome. So that is a reason for it to be for that it's cool. It's going to be on Mac. But I'm not too happy with the way EA has been handling things. I only skipped it because it's more, you know, kind of politics. You know, he said, she said bullshit. So I just decided not to bring it to the show. But there were some things going on, and the way they're handling it, you know, kind of trying to make it exclusive to Origin is not thrilling me too much. John, since you're not well, you have an iPhone, but you don't own a Mac. I have this question for you, and then I'll let Glacinator get on it in on it as well. Is this EA seeing an opportunity with the way Valve and Steam have been behaving, or is this just them continually attempting to catch up to Steam? Or what do you see this as for Origin as a service as a whole? Because their main competitor is Steam, let's be honest.
Oh, for sure. I think that there might be a little bit of both. Like, I think they thought they missed the boat on the Mac, you know, user population to try to get them, you know, playing their games, but you know, if Glace is not happy with the fact that the Mac stuff has been put on the back burner on Steam, he can't be the only one, and obviously, so you know, it's only smart for EA to try to, you know, capitalize on some of those disgruntled Steam users that are Mac users.
Well, it's funny because let me get the Glacinator, and I'll tell you the random thought I had when I read this. Glace, what do you think? Do you think they're trying to pick up the slack, you know, cut it a little bit into Steam, or is this just a kind of overall growth thing?
I mean, sure. I mean, as with Mac, you have so few games out that even if you announce a service and the service is totally derp and you have like two games, that's still two games for Mac, you know? People don't understand how slim the pickings are on this computer. It's absolutely ridiculous. So even like, no matter how bad your server, you're going to sell because there's nothing else to choose from. So that's definitely what they're doing.
Well, and I think there's actually quite a few EA games that are PC games that are, you know, also made for Mac. I don't quote me on this, and it's not in stone gospel, but I do believe EA does a fairly decent job of porting things over to Mac. I know I'm pretty sure the Sims are most of their big titles. I'd have to look at specifics. To me, it's pretty obvious that EA wants to compete with Steam, and so to them, this is the next step. But like I was just bitching about, the problem I have with EA and Origin is that I'm not 100% sure we should trust them on this. And the last line in this little article is what makes me leery. It said, EA said last October that Origin has amassed 30 million registered users. Now, I think we might have talked about this, but in case we didn't, that number is a sham. It's a complete and utter sham because there are EA games like SimCity 5 apparently is going to be where you have to download the service. Pat bought, I think it was Crysis 2, maybe Crysis 1, off of Steam and had to download Origin. When I participated in the Star Wars MMO beta, I had to download Origin. When we all played Battlefield 3, we had to have an Origin account to be able to see the, you know. So their 30 million user thing, if you just want to say, hey, we got 30 million users, you know, and it doesn't throw the word active in there, fine, fair enough. But for our listening audience at home, I think it's important to point out that those numbers aren't happy active users necessarily. I seriously doubt that our very own Patman has used Origin since, except to play that one Crisis game. Do you have an account, John? Have you been roped into it, or have you avoided it to this point?
I think I have an account, but I don't use it.
Actually, to tell you the truth, I think I have to have it for the Need for Speed game I've got on my tablet as well. But I think it auto logged in.
Oh, I that's what I have. I have one for the iPhone stuff, I guess.
Probably, because I think EA Mobile ties right into Origin.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. We may revisit this, because if Steam makes one or two major mistakes as they move into the hardware business, there could be a crack for EA and Origin. But if they keep acting like they have been, like, you know, essentially that you can't play SimCity 5 without Origin, you know, that's not going to sit well with people. Ubisoft's learning that the hard way with their little service, which I think is pretty much going down by the bow. And the next thing we need to talk about, and it's going to kill off our prediction show, I think, for this year, because things are happening rather rapidly. And to be just bluntly honest, I was okay with doing the prediction show, but they're so hard to wrangle that in reality, I think Sony has done me a favor. News broke of this, this thing, or how I'm going to use thing. I'm just going to quit stuttering over my words and use thing. This thing Sony was doing on February 20th, about 2 weeks ago. In fact, I think the first week we were back, I saw the thing and I went, oh, who cares? You know, in the mindset that it, you know, it's not GDC, it's not E3, it's not CES, it's not, you know, PAX Prime or East. And so I kept an eye on it, but really wasn't all that super interested in it. And then more word earlier this week started to leak out that this was going to be Sony's announcement for the PS4, so on and so forth. And of course, it's now pretty much all but certain that Sony will be announcing the PS4 on February 20th, 2013. John, we'll start with you, since you are a owner of a PS3. Mm-hmm. Will you be tuning in to see what this big announcement is, or watching a replay of it, because we all work or go to school? Or are you not that interested in what Sony's going to have to say?
As someone who follows video game news and the latest stuff, yeah, of course I'm interested to see what they have to say and see what, if they have anything to show, like in terms of what this thing will be able to do. But yeah, I may not watch it live, but I'll definitely follow up on the things that come out after it.
Glacinator, as someone who now owns a Vita and has seemed pretty much pleased with it, and with the the PlayStation Plus service that you got for free, how interested are you in Sony's announcement?
I'm not necessarily interested in the PS4 itself. I'm, I guess, more interested to see if they'll say anything about the Vita at all. It's been sort of dry recently. I mean, I'm not really complaining, since PlayStation Plus gets me so much free junk, it's ridiculous. But I'll be interested to see if they announce any, you know, games that I'm interested in seeing on the Vita. Like, maybe they'll announce Journey on the Vita. That'd be super cool.
Yeah, you know, outside of the fact that the speculation is right now that the pre-owned games prevention measure was done away with, there's a fucking shocker. I don't care. I am seriously tired of the hype machine. I don't care when they announce. I don't care when Microsoft announce. I'm sick and tired of these leaks. I'm sick and tired of the hype machine. And to be honest, if I didn't do this show, I'd probably pay zero attention to it until I could play with it at a GameStop or a Walmart. Because more and more, to me, it's getting to the point where it's like walking up to a beautiful sports car, being told you can, you know, drive the thing, get in there, and find out that either there's no keys or no engine yet. It just doesn't do anything for me. They, you know, they can go, hey, we announced 2 weeks before Microsoft, and then Microsoft can go, yeah, but we're launching. Just fuck it. I don't care anymore. I really don't. What does the damn thing do? When's it going to be out? And does it have more than two games at launch? And it's probably still not going to guarantee me, you know. I'm becoming more and more dissatisfied with the console scene as a whole. With never-ending sequels in most of the genres I like. With Xbox Live becoming less of a value to me. My mind is slowly starting to change on that, which I haven't talked about much and will in the future. And with Sony always seeming to have the advantage and then tripping over their own shoelaces and falling flat on their face, not to mention the PS3 hack that John had to go through, you just can't make me care. I will probably get the every last details of it because we'll be talking about it on the show because we will record a day after the announcement. But as far as personal interest goes, until the damn thing's out, I don't care. I seriously don't give a shit. So the enthusiasm, if any, will be coming from the other two sides of the other side of the screen if you were sitting here with me, because I just, you can't get me anymore. Sorry. It ain't going to happen. You know, because I mean, like the last line of the story. Sony has publicly suggested that the next PlayStation will not go on sale before Microsoft's Xbox 360 successor, although one senior CVG source called the suggestion ridiculous considering the ground Microsoft gained by launching the 360 a year before the PlayStation 3. You know, I mean, it's back to the sandbox wars. It's back to the fanboy front where, oh, whose console's better? Oh, whose console's coming out first? Oh, who gives a shit? Honestly. You know, I mean, again, I probably will watch it or at least find the most detailed report that I possibly can, to, you know, so that we can bat it about here. But reality wise, you know, no dice, you know, and maybe one of them will pull something out of their ass. I didn't say I had because we're dealing with hardware companies here. That will get my attention, you know. And actually, let's do that as a wrap up because then Glacier can slide on out the door, and John and I can cover our last topic for the evening. The Wii U got me interested because its console was about, you know, the same size as the Wii, and it had a damn tablet as a controller. In your minds, Glayson, we'll start with you. Is Sony going to have to show quite a bit to get that same awe factor, or has the Wii U now been out enough and gone over enough that Sony's got pretty level playing field?
I think it's going to be interesting to see whether or not or how Sony is going to set the tone for what they want to do with this next generation. Whether or not, you know, motion control is going, I mean, motion control will be bundled in with it, with this thing, no matter what. I see that coming for sure. But how much they're going to focus on that, or if they're going to try to go more of the route of, let's try to take it back, scale it back a little bit, you know, go for more, you know, technical stuff, which is what they used to do. It's really hard to say right now. The main thing will definitely be whether how far they're going to go into the motion or not, motion control or not. And that's going to set the tone for Microsoft as well.
John, what do you think? Is the Wii U going to have an effect, or are they going to kind of stick with their stuff, or what's your thoughts?
It's so hard to say. I mean, you know, the way the Wii set a tone for motion control, and then Microsoft and Sony kind of play catch up afterward after it hit so big, and And really, I mean, there is some motion control still with the Wii U, but I mean, looking at that tablet, it's certainly not the focus anymore for them. You know, it's definitely a valid part of their plan, their lineup. But I mean, I am really curious to see where Sony decides to go. I wouldn't be surprised if they go like all out super tech and, you know, the most craziest lifelike graphics you've ever seen. But then again, that's going to be expensive, and I don't know if they can be expensive considering how the PS3 was so slow in the beginning because of that damn price tag. And so yeah, I mean, that's the biggest reason why I'm interested to see this press conference. I would be surprised and shocked if they even came close to announcing a price tag. But again, that's what I want to see. What is the hook going to be? Is it motion control? Is it something different altogether? Is it the Oculus Rift? I don't know. Who cares? But who knows, right?
You know, if I was to get out my cracked crystal ball, because, you know, it's me we're talking about, I could see Sony going away from motion control, thinking that maybe it's not going to work. I see Microsoft is more vested in motion control over of the other two. Now let's just leave Nintendo out of this entirely. I'm wondering with both of these announcements, and it's, you know, when Microsoft finally does it, which supposedly it's going to be before E3 too, which one of them at the last minute tried to half-ass something like what Nintendo's done into their units, or will do so shortly after launch. You know, if you stop and think about it, while the Wii was for kids and the Wii U's still an unknown, it doesn't have much of a catalog. Nintendo sure is able to lead Sony and Microsoft around by the nose, even though they're kind of the third place company. So.
If I may make a prediction,
Oh yeah, go ahead.
I think if the Wii U had set the sales figures on fire more than it has, like the Wii U's done well, but it hasn't done as crazy well as the Wii did. If they had done crazy numbers, I wouldn't be su to have been surprised if you see Vita becoming integral as almost the same thing as a tablet. Like it's not as big as a Wii Pad, but you know, this cross-play thing that they have going on, so you can play the same game with a Vita. That kind of focus on games would have been would be one of those tacked on things, you know, that they might talk about. But I think that the Wii U hasn't done crazy numbers as they figured, so it might not be as much of a have as much of an influence on what they want to do.
I want to know who these wingnuts were. I mean, I saw a name redacted one was brazen enough to try and compare the Wii U sales to the Wii, which is just utterly fucking stupid. They're two different things. And you got to think, 3 million sales. It's been out since October. And this is with not a great information campaign by Nintendo up front, and a lot of people unsure of what this tablet thing was going to do. You know, the very leery, oh, I'm hardcore, I can't play with a fucking tablet, and people just unsure in general. So to me, 3 million sales in the first, what is that, October, November, December, let's call it most of January. So like 3.5 months, that's pretty damn respectable.
Oh, no doubt it is. No doubt it is.
You know, and so I just don't, I don't, yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be interesting to see if either of the other two fall for it and attempt to, you know. I mean, they've already kind of got it. I've got an Xbox Smart Glass on my, you know, on my tablet. Mostly because my phone's made by a bunch of dumb shits, so it can't go on there. Stupid Motorola, you know, but. That, I mean, all that does is let me turn it on and flip through my dashboard blade, which is cool. There is no doubt being able to just flip through it. I managed to freak out one of my cousins with it over the holidays because I had my tablet and he was staring at my Xbox screen with the controller in his hand, and I started flipping through it. And he thought he broke my controller. I forgot to tell that story. Yeah, it was kind of funny. But but
it's
other
possessed.
Well, yeah, essentially, he thought he broke my controller. It was hilarious. But essentially, outside of that, you know, I mean, the crossplay, but with Vita's been pretty good when there's been the games. I don't know. Like I said, I just can't bite into the hype machine anymore. But won't be surprised if there's something that makes me at least go, huh? All right then, maybe we got a game after all. All right, Mr. Glacinator, you're off to your prayer commitment fun Friday night for a young person.
That's a long name.
Well, you know me.
fun Friday night commitment for fun person. I like that. It should be on a t-shirt.
Yeah, I'd have to wrap all the way around you. They'd have to spin you around to read it. Anyway, so you're out of here?
Yeah, I'm out of here.
All right, man. All right. Thanks. We'll see you next week.
All right, yeah, see you next week.
Cheers.
Okay, so John brought to my attention that THQ had gone bankrupt, which I knew, but I'd been ignoring because a lot of our audience doesn't like the business side, doesn't like the gritty industry stuff. But when John brought it up again, I thought to myself, you know, there's a lot of games and a lot of studios that have changed hands, this, that, and the other thing. So I thought, you know, maybe we should go through, well, not should not go through it. Maybe we should muddle through it in our own unique WonderPod way. In other words, meaning that there's probably shit we're going to leave out and somebody will point it out to me 2 days from now. The first thing I think we should talk about, or at least I'd like to briefly talk about, I've seen some surprise around the industry, or at least some people, that THQ went belly up, given how many good franchises got snapped up at their bankruptcy sale. And this is my own personal perspective, and I did not do that much research into it, so it pretty much puts me on par with Name Redacted 1 as far as analyzing goes. I think ultimately what happened is THQ had too many franchises that were above average to really good, but their budgets far exceeded their sales. And when that happens over a long enough period of time, something's got to give. I have to admit, in the what now? We're heading into our third year. We're starting our third year here on this podcast, and was around video games for a couple more intensively for a year or so before that. I have to admit, in all that time, 4 or 5 years, this one is pretty befuddling. But actually, let's take that butt out. John, have you seen anything that was a clear cut indication of why it went out of business or why they finally went bankrupt, or has it appeared as muddled to you as it has to me?
Yeah, it is muddled. I mean, THQ historically, I mean, for years, just put out, you know, really safe licensed games and you know, things based off movies and cartoons, and just getting it out there and selling it to kids, and you know, probably making a decent dollar at it, obviously. But then there was before Darksiders came out and a couple of those great pretty good franchises, they decided we're going to be the company who makes new IPs, and we have a whole bunch. We got Red Factions, and we got Metro 2033s, and we got Saints Roses, and here we go. And I guess Saints Row would be the only example where it has blossomed. It had blossomed into something really huge. And I guess playing that gamble on some of those new IPs, and while they sold okay, they didn't sell to meet their budgets, I guess, like as you mentioned. But it's confusing. It's I don't know if it's so much muddling as it is kind of depressing, if you look at it from that angle.
Yeah, I mean, again, I don't want to really belabor the. I'm trying to grab Facebook here so that I can see all the. I forgot we put half the studios and half our notes in the goddamn Facebook chat, or I did. I just don't know, and as I said in this opening, you know, the listeners don't particularly like the business stuff, but there's got to be in our listener base, which isn't monstrous by any stretch, but still there. There's got to be at least one franchise that you care about when it comes to THQ. And as I also said in the opener, you know, that's what finally kind of turned my mind, thanks to John, into doing, you know, something on it. So let's kind of go through this. We'll start with too many things. I don't care how many more electronic devices you get. It ain't any easier. Let's see. I guess let's start with the one that's a little bit contentious in the WonderPod ranks, because the first one wasn't super great. Homefront 2. Now, Homefront 2 was being developed by Crytek because Chaos Studio went out of business. I was not happy to hear that, because while Chaos Studio's Homefront was slightly broken and a little unsatisfying in the single player, it had a lot of elements there that I thought, if they done it again and polished it up and tightened it more in a sequel, could have been really, really, really good. Like along the lines of The Walking Dead, gritty kind of good, except without the goddamn zombies. I'm not super happy Crytek's got it, but I'm happy it will see the light of day. Crytek has bought the franchise, and we'll find a publisher in another day. I'm sure probably EA is what I'm thinking at this point. So, you know, we'll see it as that goes along. But for those of you that actually still gave a shit about Homefront 2, which I'm sure there aren't many, which is sad in a way, but they kind of asked for it in a way as well. So there you go. John, you were interested in Metro Last Light, correct?
I am, yep.
Do you know off the top of your head where that one went? Who that one went to? Because I can't find it.
Yeah.
Was that Ubisoft Montreal?
No, actually. Hold on a second.
Or was that Deep Silver?
I think it might have been Deep Silver. Just give me a second. If
you want to. Oh, no, wait a minute.
It's out, but.
Yeah, okay. John's going to look up Metro Last Light, and I'll babble about some others. Actually, speaking of Deep Silver, which is the publisher / Koch Media, they actually picked up Volition, the makers of Saints Row, and it sounds like that there's a Saints Row game. Not sure if it's a continuation of the series, but there's some kind of game from Volition coming along, and it's really, really ready to go. So,
I got Metro for you. Yeah, it was Deep Silver, Koch Media, Deep Silver.
I'm telling you, Deep Silver. Actually, let's talk about that for a second. It sounds like Deep Silver really made out like a bandit in this.
Oh, they did really, really well. I mean, they got the Saints Row IP as well. And I mean, the cool thing about these two franchises, Saints Row and Metro, is that they both have games that are ready to go out the door. I mean, Metro was due to come out in February at some point. I can't remember the date, but Saints Row, everything that I've read and heard, that there was a Saints Row add-on that has been turned into a pseudo sequel that's almost ready to go as well. So, you know, I don't know if Metro Last Light will take off super big, but I mean, Saints Row the Third was a huge game, and anything following that is going to do really well too, assuming the quality is there. So, you know, they're gonna, I mean, they, according to what I'm reading here, they spent $22 million on Volition Studio and Saints Row, and they spent $6 million on the Metro license. So, you know, for $28 million, they got a really great studio and two profitable franchises. So, yeah, it's great.
And I'm gonna apologize in advance, both for my unprofessionalism. I follow and interact with on a semi-regular basis two PR people that work for Deep Silver. Their US PR person and a guy that used to work for Destructoid that now is, I think, one of their Euro PR or something along that lines. But Deep Silver really could use this, in my mind. The Dead Island game was okay. It was decent to above average, let's say, and I'm trying to be slightly kind, not because of those two, but just in general, it's kind of how I am. But it had a lot of bugs. I could not find any replayability in it for myself. I do know super hardcore zombie fans did, and that's awesome. But it didn't do as well, and I just wasn't seeing anything in Dead Island Riptide that's really making me want to plop down $60.
Yeah, the one thing about Dead Island that they got incredibly right was the marketing of that game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they have a pretty decent marketing department. It's headed by crazy people, but that's okay. The other thing we should point out, and I'm actually really happy to see this. John, you played the Darksiders franchise, didn't you? I know Pat did, but I think you played it too, right?
I played the first game, and I have full intentions to play the second game. The only thing that kept me away from it was the pile of shame.
Well, you'll be happy to know that I don't think the entire staff, but a good chunk of the entire staff of the Darksiders studio, the name's not coming to me, and I'm sorry, people. I'm jumping between too many tabs. I knew this was going to be like herd chickens doing this. The Darksiders studio, a good chunk of their staff has survived, and they are now Crytek USA.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty pleased about that. I don't know. I think Ubisoft got the Darksiders franchise. Again, I apologize. I'm not really sure.
No. Nobody has Darksiders.
Oh, nobody bid on the Darksiders. Yeah, that's right, because the studio was kind of bummed that nobody bid on them and nobody bid on Darksiders.
Yeah, and the reason being is that Darksiders 2 just came out. So unlike Saints Row and Metro, there's no incentive to pick up a studio. What I heard on Joystick was that they were just starting a new IP that really hadn't, this is very early development. So to pick up a team that didn't have a project that was underway might not be, I guess wasn't very attractive.
Vigil Games was the name of that. Vigil was the name of that. Yeah, that makes sense. But if Vigil or Crytek as the parent company could pick up the Darksiders franchise, I just couldn't personally get into the games. But I was really surprised. Well, the first one, I never touched the second one. I was really surprised that one did not do better than it did.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it a lot. It had that blend of Zelda and sort of a God of War, Bayonetta type, lots of combos and fighting, like a Zelda but more action oriented, say. So yeah, I mean, I was looking. I'm still looking forward to playing Darksiders 2. It's just unfortunate that it just didn't grab enough people.
Well, I worry that the internet hive mind went with the, it's just a Zelda clone, and didn't bother to give it a chance in any way, shape, or form. I don't know how much of that's true. And it's also important to point out, I didn't catch this my first read through, but now that I'm going through it again, actually, this isn't the first time Crytek's done this. They did this in 2009 when Free Radical, makers of Time Splitters, and the now canceled Star Wars Battlefront 3, which caused all sorts of kerfuffle several months ago, they bought them up, and they're now Crytek UK. And for those of you that might be willing to give Homefront franchise another shot, they're actually the ones in charge of Homefront 2. Now, Free Radical team members being in charge of Homefront 2, well, the ping pong ball might have gone back the other way with me, because Time Splitters is pretty damn awesome. And Free Radical had some other games that I'm not going to look up at the moment that tells me maybe they could do something with it that Chaos Studio either couldn't do or wasn't allowed to do by THQ. I don't think they have any games at the moment, but THQ Montreal was just sucked up by Ubisoft Montreal, which isn't necessarily such a bad thing. Outside of Ubisoft's love of DRM and their social media service, quote unquote, being less than stellar, they do produce some good games. And so I could see THQ Montreal fitting in pretty well. And damn it, now I got to look up. Oh, poop. Let me see.
Hit that link I sent you.
Yeah, see, I'm working on too many different things. I'm actually not working on my PC for the stories. Oh, this is going to take forever. Anyway, the Dawn of War Relic, Dawn of War series, and a bunch of others, they were picked up by Cervezas. I forget now. I can't find it. I've got just too much crap open. Let's see. Relic Studios. Oh yeah. Dawn of War and Company Heroes. Sega. That the Sega. I got a chance to say Sega, and I completely blew it. Let's see. Yeah, but that's actually an interesting one to me too. And thank you for that link, John. It took a second to get it up because I'm working on too many different devices at once. But that's actually an interesting one too because I just would have never pictured Sega picking up an entire American studio that really doesn't do stuff Sega's known for necessarily. I mean, the first Company Heroes, it was really brutally hard, but it was a good RTS game. Dawn of War, not my speed, but well crafted, well put together. Well put together RTS that was based on the Warhammer 40K universe, So really well done stuff. It a lot of times just comes down to not my speed. So, I mean, I think the bottom line here. Oh, the other one. The other one that we need to talk about because it was one I was looking forward to. I'm not sure about you, John. South Park, The Stick of Truth, which is also really due to is should be out soonish. It is being developed by Obsidian still, and I do believe it's either going to be published by Deep Silver or potentially I could see maybe Ubisoft getting in on that. I forget why, but I remember thinking at the time that maybe Deep Silver will get into it. But it's still going is the good news. I'm a little leery because some of Obsidian's games have been kind of bug festivals at times. But I'm kind of glad to see that one because of all the South Park tie-in games, this one actually looked like it had the most potential, at least to me. Do you remember it from E3? What did you think of it at the time, or am I the only one that thought this
Yeah,
might be a good idea?
it didn't really come up on my radar, to be
Oh,
honest.
I thought, who the hell else was it? Oh, it was Snagged by Ubi, as far as yeah, I apologize, not Deep Silver. It looks like Ubisoft will probably publish it, but it's being developed by Obsidian. For some reason I got it in my head wrong then, John. I thought you were interested in that game.
Not really.
If nothing else, seeing Cartman light his farts will be worth $40 when it goes on sale.
I've heard people excited about it, but it just, I like South Park, but not really a big fan.
So, anything else you see that I haven't muddled my way through yet that we should say about where franchises are going and landing? Not that we've done the most clear job of it, but I have a wrap up that might save that.
Yeah, the one of the big ones that THQ has been involved with is the WWE license, and I have a couple of THQ published wrestling games, and they went to Take-Two, which is interesting, the Grand Theft Auto guys, and I'm not surprised they went somewhere because I think WWE 13 has done pretty good. And WWE 12 was at the time their highest their I think it's their highest selling wrestling game ever. So, there's money to be made with that license.
Well, and let's be ruthlessly honest. That's a no-brainer. I mean, I know that they changed it some, but it's kind of Madden.
It is. It
It's
is
a
definitely. It is
wrestling.
definitely. I mean, they. I mean. If I may talk about WWE 12 for a second,
Sure.
it was a really, really good game, but and they touted it as being this whole new revolution in wrestling games, and it had a slightly different counter system, and that was it.
Yeah, I mean, we've discussed this on the show before, and as far as it being a now let me take that back. Maybe I'll cut it out, or maybe I'll either stumble in. But it's a no-brainer for 2K. But it's like a lot of the sports games or games like that. You know, I don't think you necessarily have to change much to get to your core audience to buy it year on year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, I'd hate to be the bastard that has to decide what is good sales for games like that. Because it's like, you know, I guess when it gets down to 10,000 copies, you pull the plug. I mean, I also... Answer me this, if you know, doesn't the WWE have some say in that, since it's their license, and since, you know, the McMahon family is known as being pretty on the ball when it comes to protecting their stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really not familiar with the whole legality of the transfer of the license, but... But yeah, I mean, I can only tell you what I've read online and about Take-Two taking it over. I mean, I'm sure WWE has some say if they approve that, you know, that developer or the publisher. I mean, but I'm really not sure how that process worked.
Well, I think it'll be fairly apparent fairly quickly if that was one of those. Oh, we're sorry, it's your license, but the company's bankrupt and the creditors need to be paid. So we're selling it whether you like it or not, because I don't think the WWE will take that lying down.
THQ did it to their own investors, didn't they? they just shut them all out and sold them, tried to sell themselves to one company.
Well, as much as sometimes he goes a little over the top with it, that's kind of where I wander into Patman. Kickstarter territory. If you're investing in a company, you're kind of taking a gamble. It's kind of like sticking your hand in a cage with a lion. You might pull your hand back, and then again, you might not. You know, so this has been coming with THQ. So those shareholders that were still involved when the bow of the ship finally disappeared out of sight, ain't got much sympathy for you. You could have been in a lifeboat months before this, you know.
Yeah.
But I would suspect that the legalities have been taken care of. But in reality, if you think about it, in one sense, that is the biggest license and IP franchise that got sold in this sale. You know,
yeah.
If you think about the overall... market share, let's say, of wrestling, and how much money the WWE probably even today pulls in on merchandising and sales and things.
Well, so much of it is their merchandising.
Oh, well, yeah, it's gotta be.
Gotta be huge.
I tried to sit down and watch the product last Monday night. It can't be that. It's making them money. That's right, a wrestling joke. Got one wrestling joke in. So anything else on the THQ mess, John, or should I wrap it up?
I guess that's about it. I mean, as far as THQ's, you know, hits and misses go, I know that they had that. Were they behind the UDraw little tablet thing that was going around for a while?
Let me look it up.
I did.
If they were, I thought that was Ubisoft, but I'm not sure.
For some reason, I think it was them. And I mean, that
it was okay. Maybe their bankruptcy is becoming a little clearer as to why it happened.
I mean,
yeah,
that's a lot of software, a lot of peripherals to have it on the shelves that didn't sell.
That's a very good point. Going back to the business thing for a second, you want to hear the stellar titles that came out for that? UDraw, sure. Studio, Pictionary, Dude's Big Adventure, SpongeBob Squiggle Pants, Kung Fu Panda 2, Disney's Princess Enchanting Storybooks. I'm not making this shit up. I'm reading it on Wiki, people. Marvel Superhero Squad, Comic Combat, Pictionary Ultimate Edition. Oh, I don't even think those came out. I don't know. There's a red by them. UDraw Studio Instant Artist and Disney Animator. Yeah, and I believe they got sued a couple times over that, if I recall correctly.
I think so.
Yeah. Well,
it's interesting how much that thing looks like a Wii U. It's a gamepad, as if it has a pin, you know? It's and here the, you know, the Nintendo are, you know, I mean, there's obvious differences. I mean,
right.
You know, but in terms of an interface, a big interface to play, you know, to use with your game on your television screen, you know, there's definitely some similarities as well. So, but yeah, I'm pretty sure they lost their shirts on that thing.
Well, I think in conclusion, what we can say is that this is probably one of the more interesting bankruptcy cases, because they had so many franchises that had potential life in them that they all went to decent homes, as did most, if not all, of the studios and staff that was working under THQ.
Mm-hmm.
And although John, and mostly me, but a little bit John, and I didn't do a super great job laying it all out for you, I think the takeaway message for the audience is just basically that if you have a THQ franchise that you love and that you were wondering whether it's going to live on or not, I think the chances are pretty good. And even if we didn't do a great job of explaining it tonight, it's a pretty simple case of putting in the franchise plus the words THQ bankruptcy, and you'll find out pretty fast. I may, in fact, link that last story that you linked in the post so that people can know. But I think that's the thing that surprised me the most, is how much, I mean, outside of Darksiders 2 and Vigil Games, which was sad in some respects, but I think you hit it dead on the money. You know, they just didn't have anything ready to go. So it's like buying a car with 3 flat tires when there's 4 sitting there with 4 good tires.
And the engine running.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think that while THQ no longer existing is a little troubling, you know, from a nostalgia standpoint. I think everybody's gonna end up all right in this one, which is kind of an odd, ending for it in terms of how business normally goes. It's usually not this friendly. So there you have it. I think we've done enough show for this week. Let me give them the social media crap and we'll get out of here. Glacinator's already out, not drinking, because he doesn't drink. If you want to get in touch with us, we have multiple ways you could do it. We have a Facebook. Just search WonderPod. Send us a friend request, unless you're an obvious bot. We'll get it to you. We have a Twitter account. It's at WonderPodOnline. All one word. We have a website where this podcast is posted. Really handy for those of you that like embedded players, because I still do the embedded player, and I always will, because I know people like it. The website is wonderpodonline.com. That's wonderpodonline.com. We also have YouTube channels. We have posts from John, from Gunsage, from G, from Patman, from myself, from Glacinator, all kinds of stuff. It's been a little quiet lately, but as the news year and other things pick up, I'm sure we'll pick up as well. And if none of that does it for you, we do have an email address. It's wonderpodonline@gmail.com, wonderpodonline@gmail.com. And if you didn't get enough Twitter before, you can follow me on Twitter at ORIGIM, or you can follow John on Twitter
at John Keogh. That's JONKEHOE.
Until episode 145, I am Bruce McGee. Happy crapping. I'm out of here, people. See ya.
For me, happy sleeping. Oh man, I can't wait to go to bed.
See you, folks.
Cheers.